job description starts with be fabulous all the time.
The mayor calls me on my cell phone and cares what I think.
We can change the world by being more fabulous. And you have that power every single day.
Billionaires in space. These guys will do anything to look down on us.
Under 18 kids can buy a gun, but they can't watch a drag queen tell a story. I thought we had moved past it. And now I'm realizing that this is sort of the life that I'm going to have the rest of my life, is dealing with this, because this isn't going to go away overnight.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. We'll get back to reporting queer news from around the world when our news wrap crew returns from their holiday break next week. This week, we're kicking off 2025 with an interview we first aired last July from the Mecca of genuine fabulousness. Sashaying through San Francisco's Golden Gates comes Darcy Drolinger, crowned by the city as the world's first drag laureate. Once upon a time, such a title might have been all in fun, but in these days of drag panic and performance bans, the job has more political significance. Out in the Bay's Eric Jansen chats with Drolinger and reveals his own secret passion.
How did drag come to you, or you to it? I mean, at what age did you first do drag?
Well, I think I was doing drag since I was about 3 years old. I was obsessed with Mary Poppins and wanted very much to dress up like Mary Poppins. And my mother took me to a thrift store, and we got a dress and some high heels and an umbrella, and I ran around the house. And
that's so intense. They were supportive.
My parents are incredibly supportive. They're both professors, and they're both artists, and they're both very great intellectual minds, and they just very open minds and open hearts. And so it's, you know, they've always marched the beat of their own drum, which at times in my life, I was a little kid, and it was a little embarrassing having such sort of quiet but eccentric parents. And I look back on it now and I realize how lucky I was. And so, you know, it was something there in my life that, you know, it wasn't something I did all the time necessarily, but something that I felt like I immediately knew I was good at, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and you could have fun with it.
And, you know, it was something that I did sort of for fun. And I started, you know, I've written many plays and musicals, and I would start writing myself characters from time to time. A lot of times I wouldn't be in my shows, but if I was, I'd write myself a character that could at least partially be in drag. But it wasn't until opening Oasis where I really had to make that decision to be like, this is going to be my full-time job. That's the moment where I've really come to terms with not having a drag name, for example, and what that meant walking through the world using the same name in and out of drag.
I'll just let listeners know that I know Darcy primarily because I take his class Sexitude, and he's always in boy clothes. So I'm used to calling Darcy he. But all the media coverage I've seen, it's always she. So I may slip from time to time, and Darcy is not in drag at the moment, I will just say. So we've heard of poet laureates whose job is to elevate the status and appreciation of poetry. So what does a drag laureate do?
You can use the exact same terminology, just throw in drag instead of poetry.
You were appointed in mid-May 2023. So briefly, how has this first year been for you?
I mean, it's a very daunting task to take something on for the very first time, but also very exciting. You get to sort of carve it out and create the role. So it has been everything I thought it was going to be and much, much more. I was not expecting how much national and international press was going to come my way due to the states around the country working hard to ban drag and take away queer and trans rights. So it was I was thrust in the spotlight a little harder than I expected.
I do remember you saying at the time that you found it fantastic and a little terrifying.
Yes. I mean, I think that it's something that we're finding out what a drag laureate does. Because drag has become so politicized so suddenly in a lot of ways. I mean, I think in a lot of ways drag has always been political, back from Compton cafeteria riots and Stonewall to just the bravery of doing something that, you know, those times was illegal, right? You go to jail.
Right.
If you're wearing over five pieces of the opposite sex clothing, which is so crazy to me because it wasn't
that long ago. They actually had a number of five pieces.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things I was thinking about when I was preparing for this interview, this conversation, is that on some level, it's one thing to just dress the way you feel like dressing. And it's another thing, it almost feels like if you dress against the norm to some extent, on some basic core level, it's a bit rebellious.
It is. It is. And I mean, and you feel it when you walk down the street, you know. And it's also one of those things, you feel it at first, and the more you do it, the less you feel it, right?
Right.
And it becomes not so hard to do once you're more sort of comfortable walking in the world like that. I mean, I'll say San Francisco is pretty fabulous in the way that, you know, I can go out and drag, at least in the places that I go, and light up the room and light up the street, and people want to, like, say hi to me and take my picture and really do appreciate it in a way that, now, I know that's not going to be how it is around the country, and it's one of the things I love about San Francisco, right? But I think that because the drag laureate thing sprung up at this same time that everything else was happening, that, you know, my talking points were a lot more about politics versus, you know, sparkle. It's very important. I talk about this in dance class.
You sit in this room and there's so much joy right now with all of us, and we're applauding each other, and we don't even all know each other's names, and we are still celebrating not just when we get it perfectly, but when we are just expressing ourselves and moving through the world. And the more that we can feel free to live in this space, to live in this energy, we are walking through the world really our truly authentic self, because each and every one of us is just a little different, right? And we all have that. Everyone who is alive wants to feel this joyous and this free. And it is contagious. And if we inspire other people, I say it all the time, but there's that much less room in their hearts and their minds for anger, hostility, prejudice. We can change the world by being more fabulous. And you have that power every single day. So go out and change the f-ing world.
For me, being the drag laureate was just elevating what I was already doing. I was already, you know, creating space for the community to perform. I was already working, you know, with a number of different organizations to make things happen in the city. I was already sort of really embodying this idea of, if everyone is a little more authentic and more fabulous, they're busy doing that. And they have less time in their hearts and their heads and for anger and hostility and prejudice. And it is amazing, the idea that we can live a more fabulous life at the exact same time we're transforming the world into a better place. And if nothing else, being able to just express that sentiment, that one sentiment, on a much bigger level, I think to me has made everything worth it, being the drag laureate. And there's all these other things that look good on paper, but really that ideology and embodying that in my life and as the drag laureate has been, you know, the most rewarding thing for me.
When you mentioned the class you teach a minute ago, you were talking about sex too.
I just
want to be sure I know. So here's San Francisco Mayor London Breed, who gave us a hint of why a drag laureate was important for the city, for the country, and the world when she announced your appointment.
The job description starts with "be fabulous all the time." It also is an important part of representing San Francisco, representing San Francisco and our values for inclusion, making sure that people know that no matter who you are or where you come from or who you love, you have someone who has a voice that will always represent you and speak on your behalf.
Did the city give you a formal job description, or how much of it was your free reign to create with this blank canvas?
It was a lot of that, and I think they gave me more free reign because I was so involved already in so many things. You know, there have been discussions along the way and ideas of things we want to work on together, me and with the city. I think that, you know, they're in the process of defining what it is as well, and looking at what I'm doing and what I've done when it's over will be, you know, part of understanding more of what they're going to want. I think that, you know, like Mayor Breed said, it really does show how important San Francisco is in terms of really letting the communities and the queer community have a voice in city politics and elevating us and seeing us. It's like we look from Jose Seria, from the court system that was created back in the day when the community really needed to take care of each other because people weren't taking care of each other.
We're talking about the 1950s, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Into now with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, which are really they are drag nuns and they are doing what nuns do. They are raising money. They are taking care of people. I mean, that all exists still here. The court system, we have two court systems here. We've got the Drag Laureate. We've got the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Then we have other people Juanita Moore and other drag personas that are doing so much community work. San Francisco is a very unique place that way. And I know that, you know, we can complain about all the stuff that isn't going right. But when I sit here right now and talk about all of this, it feels rather utopic, right? Is that the word? Is that the right word? There is a drag utopia here where the drag community gets a place at the table.
Yeah.
A real serious place at the table. And, you know, I mean, the mayor calls me on my cell phone. That's pretty fabulous, you know, and cares what I think, you know? Yeah. And so I don't know that we'll have figured out everything for the Drag Laureate when I'm done, but I do hope that I can at least create some things that could be replicated each year. Like we did the SF is a Drag, where we had 2 days of drag performances on 60 street corners, which was a very complicated thing to put together.
Bet it was.
But it came off fabulously. And that's something that I could see happening and being something that the Drag Laureate does and participates with. Like I have my own nonprofit that this could go through, but maybe the Drag Laureate picks a nonprofit that they work together to sort of sponsor and co-create the SF as a Drag. And maybe someday that would turn into the Day of Music in Paris, where everyone goes to the streets and plays music all over the city and they vie for the best corners. And what if every drag queen on the same day every year just came to the streets and just filled the streets.
And other people just got into it, the general public.
Exactly. I mean, that would be my fantasy, as if it became such a thing and people would come to San Francisco to come for the Day of Drag, where drag took over everywhere. And everyone, you know, at the coffee shops, the baristas were in drag. Everyone's in drag. A Day of Drag would be incredible.
I see your truth.
More with San Francisco Drag Laureate Darcy Drollinger after this brief and important message.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
San Francisco's drag laureate streams live from his drag and trance haven night spot, Oasis.
Hi, I'm Darcy Drollinger, and you're watching Hot Trash Live. Our top trash, billionaires in space. First up, Richard Branson, you know, the virgin guy. Well, virgin guy popped his space cherry last week in a rocket that he fully funded with his bags of money. Good for you, virgin guy. Jeff Bezos, the Amazon guy, announced he's also going to space and posted a suspiciously sincere good luck message along with a picture of virgin guy. And Elon Musk, the Tesla guy, actually bought a ticket on the next Virgin Galactic rocket, even though he already owns SpaceX. I mean, the new must-have billionaire accessory isn't a wife half your age and a dragon's horn of stolen wealth. It's a fully functioning space plane in your own private hangar. Remember when entire countries used to do this and NASA was like a fully funded government agency at the cutting edge of interstellar technology? Well, who needs those losers? These guys took all the money they should have been paying in taxes and dumped it into their personal planetary pet projects. But I'm sure spaceflight will trickle down in a few hundred years or so, right? Like, seriously, these guys will do anything to look down on us. They really put the ass in astronaut. What? Look, I'm just saying, they're really out to launch. No. Okay, I'll stop. You guys, you just don't understand the gravity of these puns. Look, I'm gonna hit you with so many puns, you'll be seeing stars. God, it's like performing into a black hole. All right, fine, I'm leaving. I need some space. All right, I gotta go. I'll galaxy you later.
I just wanna stay for a minute. You're all so sexy and so fabulous. But we're living in some crazy, crazy times, right? Where they are creating bans on drag around this country, right? And I look at this crowd and what's happening on stage, and there's so much joy in this room. There's so much love in this room. And there's so much artistry in this room. So this is the time where we gotta sparkle harder. We gotta sparkle brighter. And you know, we live stream this tonight, right? So to all our families, brothers and sisters, and everyone in between watching this, that are over there, like those cameras, let's give them some love. We love you!
From his live stream show at Oasis, San Francisco drag laureate Darcy Drollinger rejoins correspondent Eric Jansen in studio to talk more about the onslaught of drag persecution in the U.S. culture wars.
So, when, how, and why did drag become politicized? Especially recently, it seems to have become such a flashpoint in our country's culture wars.
Yes, it is. It has sort of been a shock, I think, to the whole community, because the feeling was that we were moving so far past this, and now we're moving backwards in such a you know, a harsh way. I mean, it's not just drag performers and trans people, and, you know, trans people are just more visible now. The same prejudice has been there. I feel like suddenly it's emboldened because of the politics we're in. I mean, I'd say the same thing for women's reproductive rights. I never thought we would be going backwards, and now they're trying to put a major federal ban, you know. It is insane. It's insane to me. So I do feel like, you know, in some ways, these people just could never speak about it. It wasn't acceptable to be that level of prejudice or that level of misogynist anymore. And things have changed, and somehow they feel like they can be. And I can't believe that we're even having to have these conversations. I thought we had moved past it. And now I'm realizing that this is sort of the life that I'm going to have the rest of my life, is dealing with this, because this isn't going to go away overnight.
Right.
And it makes you realize how important our freedoms are, mm-hmm. and how we have to be pretty vigilant all the time to keep our freedoms that we take for granted. And I'm in a bubble inside a bubble inside a bubble, right? You know, I'm in the United States, I'm in California, I'm in San Francisco, I'm in the queer community in San Francisco. And it doesn't get any more sort of free as that, but it also doesn't get any more insular than that, right? Where, you know, I can't travel around the country or the world and have these kinds of freedoms. You know, I did an interview with the BBC Global, you know, early on in the Drag Laureate time, and the amount of comments that were like hate comments, like serious hate comments, because people in other cultures where it's very acceptable to kill gay people, right. Let alone drag queens.
And trans people.
Yeah, and yeah. Trans people. And so you don't realize how much sort of hate there is in the world around just you existing.
Yeah.
Is. And so it's been a big bummer, but it's also, I have the freedom to like kiss whoever I want to in broad daylight on the street. I have the freedom to dress in drag and walk down the street. I have the freedom to be so much exactly who I want to be. And so if I don't take that opportunity, like, it is really a shame, because for all the people that are never going to get this opportunity, and if I'm going to not take advantage of it, like, you are not walking through the world standing up for all those people that don't get the opportunity by ignoring that opportunity when it's right in front of you. And I think we don't celebrate it enough, and we don't take advantage of it enough, because we owe it to all those people that don't.
Okay. I just found this today, and I was surprised, because I was checking on the status of anti-drag legislation across the United States. I knew that Tennessee was the big one that passed it last year, but also Montana, and at least 15 other states have bills in progress to restrict drag performances, according to a report by the nonprofit World Population Review. Some of these laws are quite severe. Under Arizona's pending legislation, drag artists who perform in front of children under 15 years old would be subject to at least 10 years in prison and forced to register as sex offenders, says that report. But most of the states plan to appeal those rulings. So in those states, there may soon be no drag queen story hours for the kids in schools and public libraries like we have here in California, nor for anyone anywhere outside where minors might just happen to walk by.
But you can take them to a WWF wrestling match and watch people beat the hell out of each other.
And gun shows, I suppose.
Yes, sure. And I mean, you know, for these under 18 kids, they can buy a gun, but they can't watch a drag queen tell a story. And I also think things like that are, you know, they're really also coming after the parents, right? And all of these red states want less government and more personal freedom, but they only want their own personal freedom. They don't want personal freedom that they don't approve of, because really these kids aren't like running away from home to get to the library for the drag story hour, right? They're being taken there by their parents who want them to have that experience. I mean, drag story hour was created by Michelle T because she wanted something special for her children, and she just did it for her kids, and it just started growing and growing and growing. And, because people wanted it.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about that we haven't touched on yet?
You know, I think that it's been a really profound, you know, time with the Drag Laureate role in conjunction with coming out of the pandemic with the nightclub and really finding bigger, stronger voice for Oasis in terms of its place in the world, not just in San Francisco, but as a place for other performers, other kings and queens and trans performers to have a home. Drag has been something that's plopped in a bar somewhere, and you gotta like turn some milk crates into a stage or dance on the pool table and change in the electrical closet or the public bathrooms. But to be able to have a space that has been created for you and your needs as a performer, with good dressing rooms and a bathroom and a closet and electricity back there, and staff that, like, you know, welcomes you, that you aren't, you know, just a stranger coming into a club, but you are coming home. And I think the more that we can create those environments for performers, it affects the performers and it also affects the audiences. And I think that is a way that we can elevate what drag is. And I also think, you know, drag is this fluid art form that is more like a lens that you can put over any other art form. And it's like when you look at something and you're used to seeing it one way, but then you look at it under a microscope or a magnifying glass, it suddenly blows it up and it looks like something completely different. And you can see parts of it that you could never see before. And I think that drag does that, where it blows up. It's larger than life. It blows up the masculine identity. It blows up the feminine identity. And you start to be able to see things in a different perspective. I think that drag has a lot to offer if people could take it more seriously.
My guest was San Francisco Drag Laureate Darcy Drollinger. Thanks so much, Darcy, for spending so much time with us here. Learn more at darcydrollinger.com or sfoasis.com.
Like a rainbow.
This interview with San Francisco Drag Laureate Darcy Drollinger was co-produced by Eric Jansen and Porfirio Rangel for Out in the Bay. David Kwan did the sound design and audio editing for the original full-length interview, which you can hear online at outinthebay.org. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. Thanks to Out in the Bay's Eric Jansen for sharing his conversation with San Francisco Drag Laureate Darcy Drollinger. The Village People, Cindy Lauper, Paul Simon, and Chase performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Jim Kennedy of Dayton, Ohio, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors to the nonprofit Overnight Productions, Inc. make this program possible. Ask us how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KHEN, Salida, Colorado, KPFT, Galveston, Houston, Huntsville, Texas, CFRC, Kingston, Ontario, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and have a very queer new year, y'all.